Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you very much. The Tennessean, Wednesday, December the 10th, 2003, gave shameful publicity to Pritchard Rum Distillery in Kelso, Tennessee. An article entitled, Rum, Worthy of Respect, was written for the Tennessean by Les Kerr. Kerr foolishly and irresponsibly states, Pritchard's Distillery in Tennessee produces spirits that deserve to be sipped. Page 1D. They deserve to be sipped, like a rattlesnake deserves to be turned loose in your house. Both the rum and the rattlesnake are extremely dangerous. Death from a rattlesnake bite would probably be more merciful. Death from cirrhosis of the liver, or from high blood pressure, or from other ailments brought on by beverage alcohol, may take longer for the one who indulges. But death is almost as certain from drinking rum or whiskey or beer or vodka as from the bite of a poisonous rattlesnake. In addition, others will invariably suffer because drinkers and drunks abuse their families, endanger their fellow workers, and kill thousands and thousands of innocent people on the nation's highways. Anyone who denies the destructiveness of beverage alcohol is either ignorant or mean or both. The liquor industry has conducted many experiments to prove that alcohol may even be good for you. A drink or two a day may actually be good for the heart, according to the publicists for the makers of strong drink. If these studies were done independently of the manufacturers of liquor, they might deserve our consideration. But when the liquor crowd conducts the experiments or approves of them, you can know for sure they are biased in favor of drinking beverage alcohol. Even if small amounts of alcohol were actually good for the heart, that in no way justifies producing or drinking a body-destroying, mind-altering, and soul-condemning beverage. Alcohol is responsible for so many tragedies in our nation, many more than I could enumerate in a short radio sermon like this. But you can rest assured that I will keep on pointing out the dangers associated with drinking, including drinking Pritchard's rum and Jack Daniel's whiskey. Before we take a look at what alcohol does to the human brain, let's examine what it does to the heart and to other organs. Dr. Robert L. DuPont, Jr. is a graduate of Emory University in Atlanta and of Harvard Medical School. In 1984, Dr. DuPont wrote a very useful and disturbing book with the title, Getting Tough on Gateway Drugs. By the expression, gateway drugs, Dr. DuPont means those drugs that open the door for a life devoted to the use of many kinds of drugs, drugs that often lead to serious debilitation or to death. He says the gateway drugs are marijuana, alcohol, and cocaine. For a number of years, Dr. DuPont served as drug czar for the United States government. He has spent many years in researching the damage all of these drugs do to people, both young and old. Please listen to a few of Dr. DuPont's comments on the damage alcohol does to the heart and to other organs. Increased intakes of alcohol have been found to significantly increase the workload on the heart and to reduce the coronary blood flow to the heart muscle. Alcohol consumption also reduces the flexibility, the contractibility of the muscles forming the heart wall. Alcohol use and blood pressure are closely related. Indulgence in alcohol over a period of time can, and often does, produce such attendant risks as angina or heart pain, phlebitis, and stroke. Page 110. Heavy drinkers have an increased risk of cancer of the mouth, esophagus, stomach, liver, and bladder. Alcohol also acts as a promoter of cancers in the lungs, the pancreas, the intestines, and the prostate. For pregnant women who consume 3 drinks of alcohol per day, there is a 10% chance that their babies will be born with fetal alcohol syndrome. The risk increases 33% if the mother imbibes 6 drinks per day. There is no safe maternal level of alcohol intake. Drinking alcohol by prospective fathers can be a problem. Page 111. Dr. DuPont observes, today, 600 Americans died because of the use of alcohol. Page 113. Do the people who operate Pritchard's Distillery or Jack Daniel's Distillery care about those 660 people? If they cared, they could not manufacture rum or whiskey or any other intoxicating beverages. Recently, I heard a medical doctor discussing whether a little alcohol was beneficial for the human heart. He did not deny it, but he had some very bad news for drinkers. Strong drink might possibly strengthen the heart, but it destroys the brain. He strongly affirmed that alcohol does far greater damage to the brain than it does good to the heart. The Pritchards desperately need to listen to what Dr. DuPont says about alcohol's adverse effect on the brain. Not that it would make any difference to them, because they cannot be ignorant of what alcohol does to the brain. If they admitted, even to themselves, that alcohol damages the brain or the heart, or the liver or the kidneys of all who drink it, do you honestly believe they would cease manufacturing it? Did not an inspired apostle explain why the Pritchards and others make wine, rum, whiskey, beer, and vodka? They who will be rich fall into a temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, which while some have coveted after, they have erred from the faith, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. 1 Timothy 6, 9 and 10. How can there be any other motive than greed for manufacturing such destructive items as rum and whiskey? Please listen to Dr. DuPont's very disturbing comments about alcohol's effects on the brain. In the brain, alcohol begins by depressing the highest brain functions first, those of the frontal lobes having to do with the individual's maintenance of values and self-awareness. With higher intakes of alcohol, the drinker's judgment, decision-making, and reaction time are all adversely affected. In larger doses, alcohol depresses the more primitive brain functions, including, ultimately, if the quantity is large enough, the breathing center, thereby causing breathing to stop. The brain function of alcoholics who have been addicted for 20 years is often noticeably and permanently impaired. Memory is impaired after very modest levels of drinking. Pages 108 and 109. In 1985, Dr. Anderson Spickard, at the time professor of medicine and director of the Division of General Internal Medicine at Vanderbilt Medical Center and medical director of the Vanderbilt Institute for Treatment of Alcoholism, along with Barbara Thompson, wrote a book with the title, Dying for a Drink, What You Should Know About Alcoholism. The book should be in the library of all parents who care about the physical, mental, and moral welfare of their children. One brief comment from Dr. Spickard will have to suffice for today. In the final stages of addiction, the alcoholic suffers permanent brain damage. Years of heavy drinking have depleted his supply of thiamine, a vitamin necessary for growth and maintenance of nerve tissue, and his brain becomes diseased and shrinks in size. Two of the most common forms of alcohol-related brain diseases are Wernicke's syndrome and Korsakoff's psychosis. Wernicke's syndrome is often reversible by injections of thiamine. Korsakoff's psychosis puts the alcoholic on skid row or in a nursing home. Pages 48 and 49. If the Pritchards and other liquor manufacturers are not aware of these tragedies, their ignorance is inexcusable and pitiful. When I was in high school at Portland, Tennessee, I came in contact with some American and English authors, such as Jack London, O. Henry, and others. Until I majored in English at Fried Hardeman University and Murray State University, I was not familiar with Sinclair Lewis, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Stephen Crane, and Thomas Mann. But I did not know when I was in college and in graduate school that most of these writers were heavy drinkers. A substantial number of them took their own lives because of their addiction to alcohol. I want to relate the sad story of Jack London, author of Call of the Wild, White Fang, and other popular books. Now I will let Upton Sinclair tell the rest of Jack London's story. In 1956, Upton Sinclair wrote a little book he called The Cup of Fury. Lewis knew Jack London and apparently grieved over London's fate. Please listen to Upton Sinclair. In 1913, the year before World War I, Jack London published a little book entitled John Barleycorn. It was a gallant work in which he told the story of a life of wild drinking, beginning incredibly enough at the age of 5 and continuing more than 30 years. In this slim volume, he described what he called the long sickness and the white logic, respectively the pessimism and the skepticism produced by alcoholism. And when he came to the end, he summed up his conclusions with these words: "Mine is not a tale of a reformed drunkard. I was never a drunkard, and I have not reformed. No, I shall take my drink on occasion, with all the books on my shelves, with all the thoughts of the thinker shaded by my particular temperament. I decided coolly and deliberately that I should continue to do what I have been trained to do. I will drink, but oh, more skillfully, more discreetly than ever before. Never again will I be a peripatetic conflagration." Thus proudly, Jack London concluded his story. He went on with his drinking, more skillfully, more discreetly, for 2 or 3 more years. And then at the age of 40, he gave his last word on the subject of liquor by taking his own life. Pages 11 and 12. Upton Sinclair mentions 40 prominent literary talents. Lewis makes the following pertinent observation. Look at some of the people whose stories we've seen in this book. These were men and women the world needed until they were 70, 80, 90 years of age. Jack London, George Sterling, O. Henry, Stephen Crane, Finley Peter Dunne, Eugene Debs, Sinclair Lewis, Isadora Duncan, William Seabrook, Edna St. Vincent Millay, George Cram Cook, Dylan Thomas, Sherwood Anderson. Great people these, with God-given power to use their minds and bodies for the betterment of the world. When they should have been enjoying their fame and feeling warm pride at their contributions, they suffered instead. Pages 175 and 176. For a number of years, Dr. Joel Fort practiced medicine in Memphis. In 1973, he wrote an excellent book entitled Alcohol, Our Biggest Drug Problem. Dr. Fort mentions that Richard Speck killed 8 student nurses in Chicago after a heavy bout in a series of bars. Alcohol holds not shock value for us anymore. As a result, no reference was made to a drunk or intoxicated killer of 8, as would certainly have been the case if another drug, such as marijuana, had been used that day. Page 14. Will the preachers feel any responsibility or remorse when one of their customers murders his family or kills a car full of people on our highways? It is my considered judgment they will not. They knew before they started distilling rum that their product not only can kill, but will kill. How many it will kill, only God in heaven knows. How will Mr. Pritchard feel if his rum kills one of his own family members? Dr. Fort mentions the popular view that a drunk can be made sober if he takes enough caffeine. Please listen to his explanation. Caffeine is believed to be effective in overcoming drunkenness, but actually what it does is change a sleeping drunk into a wide-awake one. Page 40. Can you imagine an intelligent person's drinking when he knows he will be driving on our highways? Shakespeare accused drinkers of putting into their stomachs that which takes away their brains. Do people who manufacture and sell strong drink also have some problems with their thinking? And yet, in our own community, there is an operation whose chief aim is to manufacture and to sell a mind-altering drug called rum. Not only did the Tennessean foolishly and irresponsibly give publicity to Pritchard's dangerous and destructive business, they also gave publicity to Jack Daniel's evil operations at Lynchburg, Tennessee. The article, Jack Daniel's Hopes for Barrels of Success, was written by Richard Lawson. For $9,000, whiskey lovers can buy enough of the company's premium brand for 240 people. The article continues. For $9,000, you can buy a barrel of Jack Daniel's Best. That's right. The whole barrel of Jack Daniel's premium brand, single barrel, for you and 239 of your closest friends. Each barrel averages about 240 bottles. All of them, 94 proof. Page 1E. 240 bottles of 94 proof are enough to kill at least 100 people on America's highways. How many cirrhosis liver victims are included in the 240 bottles? How many heart attacks, stomach disorders, abused wives and children will the 240 bottles affect? Does any of that matter to the people who own and operate Jack Daniel's infamous distillery? If they can make money by distilling strong drink, why would a few unfortunate victims matter to those who make whiskey or rum or any other strong drink? Did you know that the manufacturers of strong drink claim that they do not seek to seduce people into drinking? They claim they advertise their deadly poison to attract people to change brands. If their customers are drinking Old Crow, Jack Daniel wants them to change and consume their whiskey. There is a serious problem with their advertisements. They are full of lies and deception. Tragically, their advertisements not only seduce non-drinking adults into choosing to drink, they also appeal to our young people. Thousands on top of thousands of children and young people are drinking alcoholic beverages. In fact, there are 14 and 15-year-olds who are already alcoholics. Does Jack Daniel's distillery take any responsibility for those young alcoholics? The Tennessean, January 27, 2004, published an article with the title, "Suburban High School's No Safer Study Shows." The article asks, "Do you think your teenager is safer in suburban high school?" The answer is, he or she may be engaging in as much or more sex, drug use, and delinquent behavior than students in urban high schools. For example, in urban schools, 62.7% of the students have taken more than two or three drinks of beverage alcohol. In suburban schools, 66% have done the same. Urban schools, almost 8% of the students have driven while drunk. In suburban schools, more than 11% have engaged in the same stupid behavior. Page 1B. Again, I ask, does any of the blame for these tragedies rest on the shoulders of the people who make and sell whiskey? How can anyone who values the lives of our young people or older ones have any connection with a business as dangerous and as deadly as Jack Daniel Distillery and Pritchard's Distillery? How can anyone who makes strong drink claim to love their families and their neighbors' families? U.S. News and World Report, February 2, 2004, published an article with the title, "The Price of Booze." Susan Brink wrote the very revealing article. An introduction to the article reveals, drinking problems are costing business billions. Why not pay for treatment? The real cost of drinking, according to alcoholcostcalculator.org. A finance company with 500 employees pays $132,881 in alcohol-related health costs a year. A manufacturer with 3,000 employees is employing 195 problem drinkers. A small retail business employing 10 will have one alcoholic worker, costing $588 a year in lowered productivity. Page 48. This disturbing article concludes, indeed, alcohol abuse adds $23 billion to the nation's annual medical tab. That's billion with a B. Page 50. Should not the manufacturers of alcoholic beverages pay the cost of the ravages of their product? I'm sure you have kept up with the attempt of some ignorant liberal politicians who try to saddle the gun manufacturers with the cost of crime committed with firearms. The tragedy is that a great number of those who commit crimes with guns are under the influence of beverage alcohol. If they were not drinking, they probably would have enough good sense not to rob stores, to abuse their wives and children, and to commit other heinous deeds. So Jack Daniel's Distillery, Pritchard Rum Still, and all other liquor manufacturers stand condemned before God Almighty for their demonic activity. At least 50% of all serious crimes in the United States are committed by people who are under the influence of alcohol. 50%. You may not drink, but drinking costs you a bundle. Your taxes, your medical treatments, and your insurance premiums are higher because of drinkers. Not everybody drinks, but everybody pays for the evils of drinking. But what do the scriptures say about strong drink? After all, the Bible is our guide in moral issues as well as in spiritual matters. No passage in the Bible so strongly condemns strong drink as the one I will read to you now. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has babbling? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? The answer to every one of these questions is, they who tarry at the wine, they who go to seek mixed wine. Proverbs 23:29-30. Incidentally, wine unmixed with other alcoholic beverages is very low in alcohol content. But Pritchard's rum is 80 proof, which means it contains 40% alcohol. Much of Jack Daniel's whiskey is 94 proof, and some is 100 proof. That means the whiskey contains between 47% and 50% alcohol. Now please listen further to Inspiration's advice. Look not upon the wine when it is red, when it gives his color in the cup, when it moves itself aright. Proverbs 23:31. These expressions describe intoxicating wine, not grape juice. The distinguished German scholar, Dr. Franz Delitzsch, in his biblical commentary on the Proverbs of Solomon, provides these pertinent observations on verse 31. The evil consequences of drunkenness are now registered. That one may fall under this common sin, the poet warns against the attraction which the wine presents to sight and to the sense of taste. One must not permit himself to be caught as a prisoner by this enticement, but must maintain freedom against it. Volume 2, page 121. Solomon tells about the consequences of strong drink. At the last it bites like a serpent, and stings like an adder. Your eyes shall behold strange women, and your heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, you shall be as he that lies down in the midst of the sea, and as he who lies upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, shall you say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Proverbs 23:32. Solomon wrote these words about 3,000 years ago. But they are even more appropriate in modern America than they were in ancient Israel. There are several reasons for making that observation. During the days of Solomon, the fastest means of travel was a horse that might run as fast as 30 miles per hour. Today, our automobiles travel on our interstates at 70 and 80 miles per hour. A drunk riding a horse will not likely kill too many people, but a drunk driving an automobile can kill dozens. Shall I give you an example? Several years ago, a drunk driving on the wrong side of an interstate killed 28 young people who had been to a church camp. 28 precious children. The court in Kentucky sent the drunk to prison for 16 years, but he went free in just 10 years. Then the town in Kentucky, Carrollton, where the accident occurred, legalized beverage alcohol. Many Americans work in factories or in other places that require great carefulness in the workplace. How would you like to work in a steel mill with a bunch of heavy drinkers or drunks? Manufacturers lose millions of dollars every year because some of their employees are unable because of drinking to do precision work. Will some of those who drink Pritchard's rum be among those who are dangerous in the workplace? You know that will be the case. Do the Pritchards care? Not one whit. They could care less unless it adversely affected the money they make from promoting such unmitigated evil. The Old Testament prophet Habakkuk, sometimes called the philosopher, lived and prophesied during the 7th century B.C. During that time, God's people had become corrupt morally and spiritually. One of the problems was the widespread use of alcoholic beverages. The prophet warned God's people, "Woe unto him who gives neighbors drink and makes them drunk, that you may look on their nakedness." Habakkuk 2:15. Even though Habakkuk wrote about 2,700 years ago, what he wrote sounds like some of the manufacturers of drink and the drinkers in the United States. How absolutely inexcusable that anyone should provide strong drink for his neighbor. The New Testament writers often speak of the way we should treat our neighbors. Jesus told a Jewish lawyer, "The greatest commandment is to love God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. And the second is like unto it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Matthew 22:35-40. Are you loving your neighbor as yourself? When you furnish him a substance that may cause him to beat his wife and children, to kill people on the nation's highways, and to destroy his body, if that is love, please do not love me in that way. Please think about the following scriptures if you make strong drink or sell it or give it to your neighbor. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor that which is evil and cleave to that which is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Romans 12:9-10. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves. Look not every man on his own interest, but also on the interest of others. Let this mind be in you that was also in Christ Jesus. Philippians 2:3-5. Would Christ give his neighbor drink in view of God's revelation through King Solomon and through the great prophet Habakkuk? The Apostle Peter urged his readers, "Seeing you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit unto unfeigned love of the brethren, see that you love one another with a pure heart fervently." 1 Peter 1:22. Do the preachers know these passages from God's inspired word? Do the people who work at the places that make liquor and the ones who sell it know these verses? I plead with all who have any connection with alcoholic beverages to remember these words. "Whether therefore you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God." 1 Corinthians 10:31. Anyone who thinks he can make and sell strong drink to the glory of God has a perverted view of what that means. Thank you for listening, and may God richly bless you.